Securing your agency's data is paramount. IBM API Connect, integrated with Noname Security, offers a tailored solution for federal agencies. Protecting sensitive data isn't just about safeguarding. It's about ensuring availability, recovery, and reliability to support mission-critical operations. As an IBM Platinum partner, 4Inc trusts IBM API Connect, integrated with Noname Security, for unmatched speed and efficiency in securing, accessing, and ensuring the integrity of vital data. Visit FOURINC.com.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy
with Nissan
on News Talk.
Before any of that, we're going to kick things off as we do every day with our afternoon update, catching you up on all that has happened today. With me for the afternoon update, Laura Slattery, journalist with the Irish Times, and Paul Hosford, political correspondent with the Irish Examiner. You're both very welcome, folks. Laura, it falls on you, I think, to try and make sense of the EU Parliament adopting rules to govern artificial intelligence.
Yes, so this is something that happened earlier today, and it means we are one step closer to the world's first legislation governing artificial intelligence, which is something that regulators and legislators are really struggling to get a hold of. There is some patchwork regulation elsewhere, but this is really a world first. And they are saying that they are going to put some stringent controls on things like generative AI, which people will know as ChatGPT, and things like that, that, are trained on vast armies, vast libraries, I should say, of content. And, you know, it's really threatened to usurp a number of creative industries. There's also going to be a lot of controls on things like biometric surveillance that use AI. So there's a whole list of huge areas of industry that are on the cusp of being revolutionized by AI. But, you know, EU is concerned that these big tech companies could have a kind of a free for all if there's not some controls in place.
So, Paul, this is I take it then an attempt not so much to kind of hold back the tide, but rather to ensure that it's just not kind of directed in a malign manner, is that?
Yeah, fair? And I think generally speaking, the EU's been fairly proactive on this. They wanted to do something in 2019, this one, when the germ of this started. I think everyone accepts that the tide is already gone. The train has left the station. But when you look at what AI has been used to do, when you look at some of the more malicious uses of it, deepfakes, this kind of user-generated porn, these things that really do need to be regulated, that really do need to have a legislative underpinning there. If you look at what they've banned social scoring AIs. So you won't be able to amass data from people and give them this idea that China floated a few years ago of the social credit score. You won't be able to use AI for things that are that it calls essential services. So you won't be able to use an AI system to run your transport network because it might put people's lives in danger. You won't be able to use an AI system to build credit scoring applications because the coding of AI is generally fairly biased. And if you allow credit scoring to be run by AI, you might take it out of the realm of the objective and the factual and put it into the realm of subjective.
At the same time, I assume transport companies or transport systems, they'll still have elements of AI. It's hard to imagine there won't be kind of aspects of AI running parts of the system. It's just that the overall system can't be run. You don't have want a computer kind of doing the kind of, what did they call it? The trolley. What's that
the
question?
The trolley problem.
The trolley problem, whereby, you know, kind of, should I push Laura in front of this tram to save five people down the track?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose in theory...
I wouldn't do that, Laura.
They could do that.
I should have Paul in front
unless
of the
there
tram.
Were controls. I mean, I don't think anyone should really sort of be relying on any kind of moral compass at sort of within huge corporations, because they're not really built for that reason. You know, I think the EU, the legislators have tried to sort of divide things into high risk and low risk. And there's been an awful lot of lobbying behind the scenes from some companies, including very large French and German companies, to have their activities classified as the low risk ones that are subject to lesser controls. So there's still a lot of nerves around this and a lot of that we don't know.
I wonder to a degree, when we look back, Paul, and you know, kind of think in years to come, kind of God bless the ignorance we had at one time. I kind of swing both ways on this. We're talking about this for so long and still it's just kind of stupid videos of Donald Trump and Joe Biden I seem to be seeing. But then what causes me to swing the other way are things like, you know, Fergal O'Rourke is the new boss of the IDA. When he left his previous job, I think it was at PwC, he was at, or certainly one of those big companies. He talked about kind of the old pyramid model in those businesses disappearing, and it's just going to be a cylinder. There's just going to be scores and scores of people at the lower levels and organisations who won't be needed anymore.
Yeah, and that's one of the, I suppose one of the things that's important to do is not kind of stray into the idea of AI as boogeyman, because it does have lots and lots of practical applications in terms of what it can do for the back end of systems, what it can do for data sorting, what it can do for businesses. But it will have a knock-on impact. It will make jobs redundant. It will make it will raise questions about what governments have to do to step in terms of universal basic incomes to kind of keep the economy show on the road, because you can't just cut, you know, the bottom 6 or 7% of the workforce and replace them with computers and expect it to roll on. So there will be a point in the next decade where we probably look at you know, the practical uses of AI and what we've allowed happen to it, and wonder, could we have jumped in sooner? Should we have gone further? Should we have allowed it to do more? Will it have a net benefit on our lives? I think, you know, this is what the EU has said from the get-go. This is about trust. It's about allowing people understand that what is created by AI is trustworthy, that it's safe, that you mitigate the risk. And I think, you know, like Laura said, a lot of lobbying went into this pyramid system of what is high risk. But I think if you look at the list of what is and isn't high risk, you know, border controls, very happy for those to be considered high risk activities. You know, the idea of an AI system running the metro, if it ever gets built, very happy with the idea that wouldn't be something that would, or that's something that would have to have an extra layer of protection in there, that, you know, I'm happy enough with the guy pushing the lever.
We spoke to somebody working in the Mater Hospital not too long ago on this show, who gave a kind of really tangible example of where AI is going to make the world a better place, or wherein it can make the world a better place, because they started as part of a pilot project last year, and now it's been kind of rolled out on a more permanent basis, using a piece of kind of AI technology to help identify those people who've had scans, MRI scans, CAT scans, whatever it happens to be, and jumping those who might need a more timely intervention to the top of the queue, as opposed to waiting for the kind of radiologist, I never know which is which, to come in and go through everything chronologically. They still ultimately have to do it, as you say, which is what a lot of this is about. There's still kind of human control, ultimately, and a human fallback. But, you know, if Laura needs to be seen before Paul, then this AI bumps Laura to the top of the queue and you're not waiting. So anyway, I just think it's I remind myself of it when, like I say, all we talk about maybe are kind of stupid Joe Biden videos and Donald Trump and AI taking over the world. I want to talk about South by Southwest, this music festival. So all 12 Irish artists who are due to perform are not going to do so, I understand. Nobody left except Catherine Martin, the media minister, Laura, who will be there.
Yeah.
Solo act.
I'm pretty sure Catherine Martin was hoping for a quieter, less controversial week.
I'm going to Austin. Yeah. I mean, it's hardly going to grab any headlines. This is fine. Yeah. Nice 2 days in the States.
But look, you know, I think there, you know, her role there is different than the role of the 12 bands. And I think a lot of people would find that their decision to boycott South by Southwest over its links with them, the military, the US Army, sponsorships, you know, right, left and centre, they'd find that admirable, because, you know, it's just not, you know, at any time that might be unpalatable. But with the situation as it is in Gaza at the moment, and the allyship of the US with Israel, it's just really, it's not going to fly with any of those bands' fan base. But Catherine Martin is there for a different reason. And I think, you know, one of those reasons was talking to the Irish artists that were going to be there. So she's going to be a little bit lonely maybe on that score. But she is doing a raft of other engagements, and she's, you know, there to promote the Irish film industry. And there's a lot of other meetings and, you know, things happening behind the scenes So arguably, you know, her reason, you know, the impetus for her to boycott it is completely weaker than it would be for those bands.
Silicon Hills, I think they call it, isn't it, around Oslo? So a lot of big tech companies have been moving headquarters.
Yeah, and it's always been an industry event. It's not like Glastonbury, you know. It's a showcase for bands, but it's always been tied in with the industry. And as you say, Austin has a wider tech industry now, which I'm sure is another attractive reason for Catherine Martin to be there. It's a big military city as well.
They're described, the US Army described as a super sponsor. So Greg Abbott, who's the governor of Texas, talked about the fact that, the US, the kind of the future Army, the Army Futures Command, that's what it is, their headquarters, since they were established in 2018 by Donald Trump, is in Austin, Texas. And he's having none of the boycott. Don't come back, Paul.
Yeah, don't come back. You won't be missed. A strong message. But look, Greg Abbott is who Greg Abbott is. He's always been that kind of person.
He's not going to lose any votes by going hard on kneecap.
No, he's not. There's not a massive kneecap contingent in the Texas gubernatorial race. I think this is one of those things where, on a personal level, you kind of have a bit of sympathy for Catherine Martin in that this was supposed to be a quiet enough week. And she's giving a talk in at South by Southwest in the next half an hour alongside a couple of people from New York about how Ireland and the US had piloted the universal basic income scheme. It's a big achievement for her in her ministry. She, you know, way oversubscribed, way more interest than they thought it would be. Really, really successful for the arts industry here. So she was going to go out there and fly the flag for this signature piece of legislation, the signature scheme that she'd got through. And now it's a controversy.
She wasn't on the plane, you're saying, reading briefing documents about the Biden administration support for the war in Gaza. This was not what she was expecting to be talking about.
No, but I think that any minister should expect the question, especially if they're in the States. There's so much focus on it. South by Southwest started as an indie music festival around about the kind of turn of the millennium. It morphed into this movie, tech, TV, industry festival. Since then, super sponsors have come along, like Raytheon, like the US Army. It is very much linked with the US military industrial complex. I think not seeing it coming this year was probably a bit naive, though. You know, at the same time, look, there was always going to be questions about going to the US, supporting these things. Anything that had the defence industry tied to it was always going to kick up some kind of kickback. The thing that struck me was how late it happened. The Irish showcase was due to be tomorrow, and you know, bands started pulling out Sunday evening. You know, it's been well flagged who the sponsors are. It's been well flagged. So I kind of, you know, I assume it was just kind of the realities of it. But when you look at what these bands did, South by Southwest is a huge deal. You know, John Mayer got signed by playing at South by Southwest in 2000.
Okay.
You know, the big bands got really big opportunities in their careers from this festival. For Irish acts like Kneecap, like Soda Blonde, like Jerry Flannery, not to go, or Mick Flannery, sorry, not to go, not the rugby player, not to go to this. It's a huge sacrifice, especially when you've already committed. Look, there is some money there from Culture Ireland, and I believe there's Arts Council funding and that, but it, like, you're still committing your time and your energy. A lot of these people aren't full time at what they do. To pull out on a point of principle.
Yeah. I think it's worth saying that it's not just Irish acts who've pulled out. I understand it's more than 70 acts in total have, for the same reason, taken a stance, you know.
Yeah, somebody here says the small acts would have taken a big financial hit to pull out, and the promotion opportunity as well would be gone. You have to applaud them. Somebody else wonders how many other acts might have pulled out from Ireland if Kneecap hadn't started the ball rolling. And of course, then you get texts. Can all the Irish acts boycotting the festival also call for the unconditional release of all the hostages? And somebody else says, Irish artists pulling out of South by Southwest is virtue signalling of the highest order. Can we not have nice things and not have the army involved? Question somebody else. 087-1400-106. Ukrainians arriving in Ireland as of today, Laura, is this right? Or those who arrive from today onwards will only be entitled to a reduced support from the state?
I think it's tomorrow.
Tomorrow onwards. Today is the last day.
So there's really been a fundamental shift here from what the entitlements were under the Temporary Protection Directive. So before, they were effectively treated as Irish citizens. They're entitled to €232 social welfare per week. And that's now effectively €38.80 per week, plus some other entitlements that they, you know, may qualify for, like child benefit. So there's a 90-day limit on state accommodation, and there's five centres being announced, confirmed today, in Dublin, Leash, Limerick, Kildare and Cork. And after that point, they'll have to look for their own accommodation, and you know, if they find it, and apply for social welfare. They'll have to engage with employment services here. So it's really just been done to, because the existing system was really unsustainable, according to the government. That's what the government is saying. More than 100,000 people from Ukraine have come here since the war started, and those people will continue to under the old system. But there has been a shift here.
Yeah, at these particular centres, then, Paul, is anything happening at them? I just think, say, Leash, so this in Stradbally, it's kind of a tent city, essentially, the grounds of Stradbally House. I mean, are they just kind of? Well, making that a formal arrangement, or are they actually going to build something?
Well, in, say, Gerald Griffin Street in Cork, that's a revamped convent. Okay. They've been working on it for the last year or so. It was first flight last May that it was going to be used. It's ready now. What they're going to be used for is what they call integration centres. They're going to help people get. The idea is that, I suppose, the sell from the Department of Integration is that they're going to be used to help people get used to life in Ireland,
yeah,
and then transition them on to, you know, self-provided housing.
What housing?
This is the big question. And, you know,
all the spare houses we have.
You know, yeah. This idea has been knocking around for a long time. There was I suppose, fears around about the time that it would, you know, lead to homeless Ukrainian people becoming homeless. Roderick O'Gorman at the time said that he didn't anticipate that would be the case, that it didn't, you know, that I suppose they would slow down the numbers from tomorrow. I suppose I don't like doing the wait and see thing, but we will only be able to understand the impact of this in 90 days or 91 days as it is.
What you suspect, or what you maybe fear might happen, and maybe it's unfair to say suspect, but a possibility is that we just get a repeat of what direct provision was. I mean, that was brought in, the late 90s. This is just an emergency measure. We will put people into direct provision centres, but they will not stay there for long. They're going to transition to kind of their own door accommodation, and people spending year after year after year in them. I mean, in 90 days' time, when a Ukrainian family turn around and say, I know we're meant to be out, but there's actually nowhere for us to live, What's the department's plan, Laura? That's the question you'd have to ask.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people are asking that question and not really getting a whole lot of detail back. You know, you can see that this has been done for out of some kind of, you know, sense of pragmatism and a feeling that they couldn't keep going with the system as it was. But there's huge questions that will have to be answered at some point, and a lot of danger signs here because we just don't know when the war is going to end. I mean, there's just no sign of it ending. And that actually is one of the things that could have been predicted, I think, at the start, that it was going to be a long war. So it's a very awkward, you know, difficult situation. And the government will say, you know, what they're doing is just bringing the entitlements here in line with those offered in other EU countries. So that's their argument, but what it actually looks like in practice, I mean, it has all the hallmarks of something that could become very uncomfortable indeed.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. As Paul says, 90 days' time, proof will be in the pudding. Paul Hosford, political correspondent with the Irish Examiner. Laura Slattery, journalist with the Irish Times. Thank you both very much for joining me.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With Nissan.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.